Welcome to Inside Wealth. I'm your host, Stu Zimmerman, right here on Talk Radio 910 AM KNEW.
We're here in studio with Brent Kessel, a certified financial planner and a highly well-respected one at that. Ranked in the top 250 financial advisors in the country by Worth Magazine, and the company he co-founded, Abacus Wealth Partners, was also in the top 250 wealth management firms in the U.S. by Wealth Manager Magazine. And we're here talking about a book he recently wrote and came out with called It's Not About the Money. Unlock Your Money Type to Achieve Spiritual and Financial Abundance. So clearly we're talking about a tool of self-awareness here, so we have a better understanding of who we are in relationship to money, and hopefully beyond that. But you do mention there are archetypal patterns that we have, and there are eight of them that are like money personality types.
Yes.
Why don't you share with us what they are so our listeners can start to understand more about who they are?
Sure, be happy to. So, I mean, I just want to say by way of background that I created these money types not just to have some cutesy labeling system, but because I was seeing that people really kind of fell into different groups around money. And more importantly, that they didn't, you know, that they didn't necessarily stay in those groups, that they could actually cultivate the other money personality types that were lacking, that were missing, and that were really causing most of their suffering and the reason they weren't having a balanced, happy relationship to money. So there's no hierarchy here. There's no better or worse. Each money type has good attributes and kind of, you know, lower functioning or more pain-inducing attributes, if you will. So I'll run through them kind of quickly, and then we can go into them in more detail if you want. The first is the guardian, who is always alert and careful with money. The second is the pleasure seeker, who seeks pleasure and enjoyment in the here and now. That's how they spend their money for the most part. The third is the idealist, who prioritizes creativity or compassion, sometimes social activism or spiritual growth over money. Fourth is the star. The star spends or lends or invests money to seek recognition, to feel hip or classy, or to increase their self-esteem. Fifth is the saver, and the saver accumulates financial assets to achieve security or abundance. Sixth is the innocent. The innocent really avoids putting significant attention on money and believes or hopes that life will work out for the best that way. Seventh is the caretaker. The caretaker gives and lends money away to express compassion and generosity. And eighth and finally is the empire builder, who thrives on the power and innovation required to create something of enduring value, usually a business.
Okay, so if all of them are, in fact, without any judgment, kind of equal, it sounds like each one of them has the capacity for struggle.
Yep, each one of them certainly has the capacity for struggle. And they struggle exactly to the extent that they are believed unconsciously, meaning if we just are following their dictate, their strategy for success, you know, without ever questioning it and without ever looking at whether it works, we struggle. So let's use the pleasure seeker for an example, because it's sort of obvious to everyone. At the lower functioning level, the pleasure seeker is the person who goes out and does retail therapy when they're feeling stressed about money. They buy things that make them happy. They bring sensory enjoyment. It might be great meals. It might be clothes. It might be trips. But it's all about feeling good. It doesn't really matter if people perceive them as being cool or hip for buying these things. Doesn't really concern them whether it benefits other people or not. It's really about their own enjoyment. So that's kind of the negative side. Now, if that's followed almost to the exclusion of all the other archetypal energies, you know, if there's no saver in there to kind of accumulate for the future, if there's no guardian making sure they're not going to run out, these are the people who chronically overspend, who end up with a lot of consumer debt. But the same thing's true of the saver or the empire builder. The saver can just keep on accumulating. It's like the classic millionaire next door driving the 10-year-old used car, even though they've got $5 million saved up and invested. The empire builder who works 80-hour weeks, even though their business is already worth much more than they could ever spend in a lifetime. And it's because there's an intelligence to the strategy. The strategy has worked for them for so many years. They can't question it, really.
Well, it sounds like these are personality types that people would define themselves as and say that this is who I am, as opposed to this is just a pattern of behavior. I mean, can we really separate out who we really are from the way our personality deals with money?
That's a great question. I mean, my experience is that our personality is very separate from who we really are. I mean, if you're talking about that in the most kind of yes. deep sense. You know, and I think anyone who's engaged in contemplative prayer or silent meditation or really kind of inquired into who am I, you know, what's at the root of all this, you realize, like the sage Lao Tzu did, that our conditioning creates our personality. It's just the experiences we've gone through that make me into Brent Kessel and you into Stu Zimmerman. And it's like what Lao Tzu saw was this leaf being blown by the wind through the sky. And it just suddenly clicked for him that if the wind were to change directions, the leaf goes a different way. And his life was no different. You know, the fact that I came from a family of divorce, the fact that I was born in South Africa and then moved to this country as a 10-year-old, the fact that I was in the mortgage business in my early 20s and had a huge deal fall through and I was, you know, in debt on my credit cards and didn't know where next month's rent was going to come from, all of those experiences created the saver energy as being my dominant archetype. And then later experiences have balanced me out more. So, you know, by looking at that, and again, these exercises in the book, It's Not About the Money, really take you into what created your money type and how do you create some balance in it. And that it is through balancing them out, through letting go of your sort of unconscious clinging to their strategies, that you start to realize who you really are, because you realize you're not just that personality type.
We're here with Brent Kessel, a certified financial planner and clearly a deep thinker, in terms of taking a look at where true wealth really is. And can we actually have our feet in more than one of these personality types or archetypes simultaneously? Or is it a matter of kind of, depending upon which way the wind blows, do we shift from being, let's say, a saver to a guardian, or from a saver to a pleasure seeker to, you know, how does that work?
It's a great question. I mean, the answer is, left to our own devices, we'll tend to be in one much more dominantly than the others. The aim of the book and the aim of my work with clients and in workshops is that you have feet in more than one at the same time. So, you know, I've got this yoga background where I practice 2 hours a day, 6 days a week for about 16 years. And doing that with some pretty skilled teachers, they bring your attention to the part of the body that's most unconscious. So you might be doing a pose where you think the whole point is stretch your hand to the ceiling, and all of a sudden they're stepping on the outer edge of your back foot. You're thinking, well, I didn't even know that existed in this moment. But all of a sudden the whole pose wakes up, you know, and it's like you've brought awareness and consciousness to parts of the body that weren't even there before. So the idea, there's a chapter in the book called The Middle Way, and the idea behind that is that if you can cultivate putting feet in multiple personality types, multiple financial archetypes at the same time, you actually, that's how the transformation occurs. That's how you create the freedom and fulfillment we all say we long for. We think we're going to get there through our primary archetype. If I'm a saver, I think I'm going to get there by accumulating more and more and more and more money. And we never do, because it's so young and kind of just, you know, run by these early conditioned experiences. But as we, you know, cultivate the caretaker, which is more compassion and empathy, as I cultivated the pleasure seeker, which is really enjoying more of my money for today, as I cultivated the empire builder, which is really focusing on making a difference with my business, all of a sudden money became this much more rounded and fulfilling relationship in my life.
So that's really interesting, because here you're talking about having an inner transformation, if you will, through different action steps on the outside. So it's almost like transforming from the outside in.
Yep.
Rather than going from within and going into, let's say, meditation or yoga to help to wake up the parts of your being that you may be unaware of or unconscious, as you said in your term.
Yep.
And through that process, come to a deeper understanding of where you've been.
Yep.
and the context of, yeah, it's only been a set of experiences. It's
yep.
not who you are.
Yep.
And from that, have a greater sense of freedom to choose between other patterns of relationship.
Yeah. So the way I would say it is that the actions take place in the external world. The awareness, though, needs to be predominantly in the internal world. So, yes, while you're going out there and giving more money away or investing differently or spending more of it on personal pleasure, the awareness where you're putting the attention is not on that. It's not on, you know, how are the investments doing, or, you know, what am I actually spending it on? The attention really is on, what's my reaction to this? What's my primary archetype doing as I do this? As I start to give some of my savings away, my saver's flipping out. He's not happy. You're threatening his very fundamental belief about what makes us secure and happy. And so one needs a lot of compassion, a lot of kind of, you know, really an internal spiritual practice is the way I describe it, to tolerate that. Otherwise, the Savior is just going to come back up and say, no, you don't. You know,
right,
take
right.
back over.
Exactly. Now, I'm kind of curious, Brent, about you know the diversity of the people that you've interviewed in writing this book. And every person from the Dalai Lama to Thich Nhat Hanh and Ram Dass to John Bogle, mm-hmm. who is the founder of the Vanguard Funds. Mm-hmm. So you talk to people both in the financial world and in the spiritual world.
Mm-hmm.
Did you find their observations to be significantly different in terms of relationship to money? Because clearly they have done different things with their lives.
Yeah. You know, it was more striking how similar they were. I expected there to be great, great differences. You know, I expected sort of the conventional wisdom, which is that the spiritual guys would say, yep, money's kind of dirty stuff. It creates a lot of suffering in this world. We'd be better off without it. You know, and I expected the financial guys to say, here's the smart things to do with money. And yeah, I don't really care about, you know, philanthropy, because it's nice to do if you've got enough, but it's not anything integral. And it was the opposite. So the spiritual teachers, you know, Rabbi Harold Kushner, who, you know, is a wonderful teacher and author, you know, and the others, Joseph Goldstein, all saying that essentially money itself's not the problem. Being wealthy is not an impediment to spiritual growth. The impediment is craving and attachment. So it's that gripping kind of unconscious, you know, grasping, as you said, that is the impediment. The money itself's not the impediment. It's actually an aid. Thich Nhat Hanh said money's a great thing. It allows you to be able to go on retreats. It allows you to be able to use money to help other beings end their suffering. And those are all wonderful spiritual acts to do. And the financial guys surprised me too. I mean, it might be because many of them I spoke to, Dr. Harry Markowitz, Nobel Prize winner, John Bogle, they're in the later years of their careers, even though they're all still making great contributions. But, you know, they were all talking about philanthropy. Mike Murray, who was the former head of human resources at Microsoft, was another one. This man's dedicated his life to eradicating global poverty. You know, and so the financial guys were very inspiring in terms of saying that if you're not using your money for the greater good, for the interconnected well-being of all humans and, you know, and other beings, you're missing something, and you're doomed to a certain level of discontent, no matter how much you have.
Again, we're here at Brent Kessel, who's giving us some very sage advice here. He's a certified financial planner and also a yogi. So he's taken care of both his inner and outer abundance to the best of his ability, and is certainly doing a great job from this humble vantage point. Let's talk a little bit about the spiritual abundance for a moment, because that is something that is and can be independent mm-hmm. of financial abundance.
Certainly.
So it's not required that you go and be the saver and make all the money so you can finally feel good about yourself and go out there and have a greater sense of compassion for humanity.
Yeah,
that's a game we can play in this very moment.
Yeah, absolutely. It's, I mean, you know, the innocent often doesn't have much money. The pleasure seeker sometimes has money, but more often than not doesn't. And both of those archetypes can express generosity right now, today. It can be with money. It can be with time. It can be with, you know, skills and talents that they have that others don't. But it's really the sense. Yeah, so a lot of people have said to me, so what's so wrong with desire? You're talking about this wanting mind and craving and grasping. And yeah, I mean, I never would have gotten where I am in life without desire. And it's true. The distinction that I like to make is between the wanting mind's desires and what I call heartfelt goals. And the way to distinguish between them is wanting mind's desires are very self-concerned. They're just about me for the most part. You know, I want the chocolate milkshake now because I'm going to enjoy it. Heartfelt goals are, they almost always include benefit to other people and, you know, fairly direct benefit. So it's something I'm going to be doing that'll really help my family, someone I care about, you know, charity, someone who's suffering. And so there's a patience about them. There isn't this, you know, I've got to satisfy it immediately sort of component that there often is to the wanting mind's desires. And yes, every money type can start to express that regardless of money. I'll just say briefly, when I was in France with Thich Nhat Hanh and the 300 monks and nuns who live there, they have nothing. They get 40 euros a month of allowance. Most of them don't even spend half of it, and they give the rest to the Vietnamese orphans. And my experience was these were the happiest people I've ever met on the planet.
Well, there's a lot to be said for happiness. In fact, I think all of us would raise our hands that isn't that what a lot of the money's about? Isn't ultimately just boiling down to our happiness and the happiness of others? And with that, Brent, thank you so much for a great contribution to society with this book.
Thanks so much, Stu. It's been great to be with you.
Thanks for showing up. Welcome to the movement that takes your wealth to the next level. Beyond the surface of money to the service of money, where you get provocative commentary and lively conversation about inside wealth, right here on Talk 910 KNEW.